Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. And this is Karen Tate. I'm here again with you tonight, as I've been for the last 3 years on Wednesday. And tonight's musical offering opening the show was Corn Goddess by Lisa Thiel. Well, tonight I have as our guest a woman who's been around the women's spirituality movement for some time. Her name is Musawa. She's a pioneer in earth-based women's spirituality, women's land communities, and women's culture since the 1970s. She found We Moon, Gaia Rhythms of Women publication, and she's narrated the recently published anthology In Spirit of We Moon, celebrating 30 years of We Moon art and writing. And I was very lucky to get a copy of that book. Absolutely gorgeous. It sits on my coffee table, and whenever I get a minute, I glimpse through it, and I would highly recommend anyone who loves art and loves women's spirituality to check out that book. So stay with us as I pick Musawa's brain about what she's seen transpire in the last 30 or 40 years. I'll get into global feminist connections with her, the women's land communities especially. I didn't know about those, that they're out there, and we should know. And we'll probably get to how art has played a role in earth-based women's spirituality. But before we get to those important subjects, I have a couple quick announcements. First, Sacred Sundays are starting at the Green Man in Hollywood this Sunday on July 24th, and they continue for each consecutive fourth Sunday. So you can get more information on my website, KarenTate.com. Just go to the Sacred Sundays button to the left, gray button, and see what that's all about. We've been on hiatus for a bit, but now we're back and happy to be serving the community once again. I'm one of the Sacred Feminine Priestesses facilitating the services each month, one of the founders. So please come and say hello. I'd love to meet you in person. Also, the annual Isis Birthday Mediterranean Feast is set for the next Sunday on July 31st, and we only have two places left. Please email me if you would like me to reserve a space as we wait for a last-minute payment from you. We've been celebrating the birthday of our great mother for almost a decade now, each July, and we continue the tradition, but this time with a feast instead of a high tea. If you're interested in joining us, it's going to be in Hawthorne, California, and I'm happy to give you all the details. Just email me, and I'll send you the menu. It's $25, and like I said, it's a restaurant in Hawthorne, California. And as I promised, I want to tell you about Wendy Rule performing in North Hollywood at the Lonnie Chapman Theater on Friday, July 29th. From her press release here, Australian visionary songstress Wendy Rule will be making her only Los Angeles appearance with the alluring musical merriment of Silver File. One night only, Friday, July 29th at 7:30 at the Lonnie Chapman Theater. Australian visionary songstress Rule weaves together music, mythology, and ritual to take her audience on an otherworldly journey of depth and passion, drawing on her deep love of nature and lifelong fascination with the worlds of fairy tale and magic. Wendy's songs combined irresistible melodies with rich oral texture. So if you want to know more about that, you can go to pendragonpublishing.com. That's P-E-N-D-R-A-I-G publishing.com. Let me see if there is a phone number here. Well, you could go to peter.padden, peter.padden, P-A-D-D-O-N, at pendragpublishing.com. Again, that's P-E-N-D-R-A-I-G publishing.com. Should be just an absolutely wonderful, wonderful concert. Okay, well, let's just turn our attention to tonight's guest. She's calling us from steamy New Mexico. Musawa, I think you're on the line with us.
Yes, I am.
Well, thanks for calling in tonight. And thank you so very much for sending me the beautiful anthology. You know, the pictures, you know, it's hard to find words, quite frankly, to describe the incredible depth and beauty that's in that book. I can't think of a better coffee table book, quite frankly. You know, I mean, you just open it up and it just, I don't know, inspires conversation with, you know, people you might be having dinner with or drinks or whatever. You know, you really did a wonderful job with that.
That's great. It really was quite a task to put together 30 years of WeMoon, which is really an annual astrological moon calendar for women. But it's full of art and writing from women all over the world. And over the years, people have learned about us and send in their work. And I'm always amazed at just the free flow of women's creativity that's just out there looking for a place to be seen.
Well, and I think, too, as someone who is not an artist but has been inspired in artist-like ways by Goddess, I want to say a goddess, I think, inspires so many of us women to do things that maybe we didn't even know we had the talent to do or the capability to do. You think?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, a lot of our... It's really just art and writing, whatever comes, you know, how the spirit speaks through women is what WeMoon is all about. And it's not all professional artists and writers by any means at all. And a lot of times this is the first time someone's seen their own work in print and really realized, you know, the value of their thoughts, of their praises, of their, you know, whatever they're working with on their own selves and in the world. So
well,
it's really... fun to have all that coming through and to be able to work on it collectively with a group of women in Oregon is where we put it out every year. It's just streaming through. It's amazing.
Well, and you're providing a wonderful platform you know, yeah, just a wonderful service for women because, you know, we women, I think, too often don't realize our potential, don't realize our talent. You know, we always think, oh, somebody can do it better, you know, and we hold back. And, you know, I think when we see other women taking a shot, it encourages us to also, you know, to maybe reach out and take a little bit of risk. And, you know, then we see just how good we really are.
Right, yeah. We'd like to see some of your work, Karen, in the WeMoon someday.
Well, you know, maybe some writing, You know, my drawing is limited to our Egyptian temple wall paintings, you know. I'm not really an artist, although, well, anyway, we don't need to talk about that. So let's, you know, let's talk about, I mean, you've been around for a long time, and I know listeners, as well as myself, you know, we love to hear how it used to be compared to how it is now. Are we making progress? Are you optimistic? You know, let's start there. I mean, because there aren't that many elders that we can, you know, well, there probably are. Maybe some of them we've forgotten about, unfortunately. But elders in our community that can really make a comparison between when they started, you know, in this, in, you know, down this path, compared to what it's like today. What would you say are the most striking changes, for the good and for the bad?
Mm-hmm. Well, for one thing, it's very obvious is that. In our day, basically, back in the 70s, we were basically making it all up from scratch. It came from our relationship with the earth, moving out to the land, our relationship with each other as women, and opening to the potential through it with not that much written material out there to guide us. And now it's just so much, you know, so much women's creativity and spirituality has been sparked. And you know, as they say, she is returning, and she's returning full of energy and beauty and a power that back then, you know, 30, 40 years ago, we were just beginning to glimpse. So that, to me, is a huge shift and really an encouraging sign of the times. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I had Patrick McCullum on the show, and, you know, he said 30 years ago his house was almost firebombed because he dared talk about Goddess publicly. And now today, mm-hmm. I mean, he's just made incredible strides for the pagan community in a huge public way. Do you find that Goddess, you know, is that much more out of the closet, that more people know about it, that it's more acceptable? I mean, I know you're living in sort of in a part of time in a blue state, but what do you think in general?
Yes, definitely. She's come out of the closet, and women's spirituality is a force to be reckoned with in the world today. And it's not just sort of secret covens that, you know, there's a lot of leftover unconscious material from the days from the witch burnings and from the days when women's spirituality was still holding out. And the patriarchy really took over and broke the lines, the lineage to the mother line, in a very forceful kind of way. And so I think a lot of us do have some fears and things left over from those times, and yet, and slowly, and actually not all that slowly, they're dropping away. I mean, these days, women who are just getting involved in women's spirituality don't even give that a thought, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's so available and so part of, you know, it's a real strand in the culture that's out there.
Well, do you worry, though, when you see all this right-wing religious intolerance against Muslims, that, you know, do you ever feel like it could so easily turn on pagans? I mean,
I do. I'm aware of that. And, you know, and it could so easily turn on lesbians. It could so easily turn on anybody who's a minority or a part of an oppressed group, which is just about everybody in one way or another. So, yes, of course, that's a big danger. And even for our women's land communities, I know in the beginning there was kind of that thought, well, maybe we should constitute ourselves as a church because we're living close to the mother, we're, nature is our teacher, we're here for her. And but, you know, I myself felt, well, we need to hold back a little on that. It would just open us up to sort of cult accusations and fears
yeah.
of the great mystery that women's spirituality brings up. But I don't think that's true anymore. I don't think we need to do that. I think, you know, the more we can be out there with what is true for us, the better. Not that we have to, you know, stomp it into people's faces or anything, but just be who we are, you know, be who we are, because now more than ever on this planet, we need to bring back the balance that has been lost with the suppression of women, women's consciousness, women's spirituality, women's truth.
Right.
And, you know, it's time to stand up and be counted, and not just be counted, but stand up and find out, connect
right.
with other women and create together and see what it is, what kind of world we want to create. And you know, and work on the various different levels that so many of us do to bring in feminine consciousness, spiritual consciousness, and political.
Well, you know, it seems like the time is no better, you know, when you think, you know, they say that it's the moral imperative of our time to empower women. You know, and a lot of times they mean in third world countries, but I mean, we don't even have equal pay here, you know.
Right. I mean, the Equal Rights Amendment never passed.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Very basic things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So much yet to do, and you know, really, goddess theology offers a roadmap. You know, that we could, you know, cherry pick some really good ideas for a more sustainable future if we could be more public. You know, do you ever think about that? I mean, I know you're public in terms of you put out the We Moon publication, you know, do you ever think about how we could be more visible?
Well,
or if we
funny,
should,
just,
you know, if we should.
I just went on Roseanne Barr's website, and there she was in a little video clip standing up on a box that said soap on it out in front of the White House, running for president on the Green Tea Party platform.
Yeah.
And espousing the Church of Common Sense as one of her religious backers.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, I've seen her. She's,
you know,
great.
There's all sorts of ways to do
yeah.
that. And I think we need to be challenging. You know, it's falling apart on its own. We don't even need to do anything. It really is, but it's so out of control right now in terms of natural forces and the contradictions of the system that basically the patriarchal system that was really based on separation and division, divide and conquer, you know, where every difference is a source of conflict. Someone's got to be a winner, someone's got to be a loser. It's just a bankrupt perspective that cannot survive. And so
right.
we, you know, I have been more involved myself. I mean, in the 70s and 60s and 70s, I was very involved in civil rights and the anti-war movement and the people's movements of the time and women's liberation. And it came to a point for me where I felt like I was running around in circles, constantly reacting to things and against things that were happening in the patriarchy. And I really wanted to shift gears and move towards, you know, putting my energy into what I wanted to create and
right.
what I was for. And you know, our imaginations are limited by all our conditioning in the dominant culture, which has not really opened a way for everyone to realize their greatest potential and offer the gifts that we have to offer. So I have kind of focused more on being with women, creating women's community. What is it we want to do? It's very difficult in a lot of ways because we have so much baggage that we're taking with us. And it's not as if you live in a women's community, you therefore are separate from the patriarchy. Not at all. I mean, we carry it with us. We deal with it in our jobs and our work so often. And we live in this world that is so threatened by what has come from that place. So
well,
I think there are many, many different ways to different levels and different approaches that women are becoming more and more empowered in whatever it is that draws their passion, you know, where their heart really is, where they can really put their energy into and it grows rather than just drains them. It's part of what they're creating. And,
well,
and
you know, I often ask, you know, the foremothers, the way showers, when they come on the show, you know, does it bother you when you see pagans, Wiccans, goddess advocates, whatever they want to label themselves, calling themselves that, but then having a seeming inability to reconcile their politics with their spirituality? And by that I mean, you know, maybe they'll support somebody who shoots, you know, animals from helicopters and you know, bans books, or maybe they'll support a political party that's all for oil companies and, you know, and against clean air and clean water and protecting us from, you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
You know, how do you, I mean, is it, you know, how do you personally address that? I mean, are you ever called upon as a leader to, you know, to talk about that?
Yes, and more often called upon to deal with it among, you know, with the people that I'm working with and moving with and living with and trying to create things with. I think it's part of what you're talking about is that, like separation between, say, politics and spirituality or this world and the other world or turning within and, you know, looking at what forces are working on us from outside. Those kinds of separations are part of the problem. It's part of the problem that we have to get over. And so it's very important that there be people who have a more all-encompassing perspective. And I think a real deep feminist perspective includes that, both in terms of politically, ideologically, but also just in terms of the spirituality that, you know, we're all connected. And these separations are often false or necessitated by a culture that creates those kinds of divisions. And sometimes it's definitely helpful to, I mean, I have lived in women's community for most of my adult life. And not many people can say that. You know, I've really, my intimate partners, my friends, my community, even my work life, doing WeMoon for 30 years, I live and work and love women, and they really make up a huge part of my world. And yet, I do not call myself, actually, I don't call myself a separatist. I call myself a connectionist, because what I feel like is I am wanting to connect with women with who we really could be and with our real potential. And when it's always, you know, when we're sort of so divided from each other and just in the whole culture, everybody is divided from each other, it's hard to, you know, find the space to do that. So having to actually create women-only space so that we can, you know, explore who we are, not in reaction to what's out there, but in terms of what really is coming from within. But that is not to say that we should, like, hide our head in the sand or something. For one thing, it's not even possible, and it's certainly not desirable, and that's not what's happening. It's just that, you know, just the same way the civil rights movement then moved into black power, or you know, that it had to shift a little bit from assimilation, integration as assimilation, into recognize, you know, restoring and healing the power of the people,
mm-hmm.
who they are. And so there's different things that are called for at different stages in the growth of our movements, and they're all a part of it. It's not like one is right and one is wrong. But that separation between politics and spirituality is just a long-standing old one that is especially difficult to shift, because it seems to be dealing with completely different types of realities, and really they're very interconnected.
Yeah. Well, I always have trouble trying to wrap my mind around someone who says they're you know, part of an earth-based religion, but then they'll go vote for Republicans, you know.
Right.
You can't connect the dots, you know.
Right. And also, sometimes this earth-based part of it is quite theoretical. It's not really based on putting yourself into nature and being close to the mother and experiencing what comes up for you. That's really where my spirituality came from. I was not raised in a religious family, and it would have never occurred to me to be very involved in spirituality, except that I was fortunate enough to be able to grow up in the summers where I could run wild in the woods and really exploring, somehow living in nature, being in silence, you know, being alone, mm-hmm. in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Though
if you don't go to that spiritual place, you know, of, mm-hmm. of earth, you know, just on a, you know, a higher conscious level, you don't want to destroy and poison your environment, even if it's for selfish motives. You know,
mm-hmm.
who would want to? It makes no sense to me. You know, if you say you care about the earth, whether it's, you know, for environmental reasons or religious reasons, you know, it just makes no sense to me that then you would, you know, support parties who don't protect the earth; they protect the oil companies. You know,
right? It's sort of like not connecting the dots.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's get off politics and let's talk about something more fun. So, all right. So, Wee Moon, you said it's 30 years old.
Mm-hmm. Well, we
and
just
how
came
did
out
it,
with
how
Wee Moon
did
2012,
it,
and that's our 31st. Edition of Wee Moon, and I was the founder of Wee Moon back in 1980, and I am now sort of pulling back, and a whole new generation is taking it on, or it's really a multi-generational group of us who are working on it. But it's really wonderful for me to just have received the Wee Moon 2012, which I encourage people to go to their local bookstore and get.
Is there a website?
www.weemoon, which is weemoon.ws, as in website. And you can order online our date books that's the 30-year-old, that's our mothership, kind of what that is. It's a women's planner, but at the same time, right alongside of where you would record your daily activities or dreams or, you know, schedule or whatever it is you want to use a planner for, you're also, you know, just there's also the cycles of the sun, the moon, the stars, and then all this incredible art and writing from women to just as a backdrop to how we live our daily lives, just to sort of weave in the inspiration that women are feeling and giving to each other these days.
So what inspired you to start this? Had you always been an artist?
No, in fact, I'm not an artist.
Okay.
To me, we sort of say We Moon, well, it's kind of like We Moon is a way of life, too. It's, you know, in my art, it's more in seeking a way of life that encourages the wholeness in people. But what inspired it really was I was living on a women's land in Denmark that was in the late 70s, you know, where I just got there by who knows what route, except that an ex-lover of mine lived in France, and I went over there to be with her, and one thing and another, this whole group of women who were looking for women's land passed through, and we ended up, by a circuitous route, we ended up in Denmark, where a group of women on welfare had pooled their checks together and bought land in Denmark, and then just sort of sent out an invitation to the women of the world, come be here. And we heard about it, and we went there, and it was a wonderful group of women from many different countries. We often didn't speak the same language. Very anarchistic group in the sense of there was nothing organized. You know, if someone was going to cook dinner, they needed to feel like cooking dinner, and it might not be till midnight till it happened. But meanwhile, there you would find yourself with a group of women from Denmark, the Netherlands, Spain, Germany. I was one of the very few Americans there. And as it turns out, this land had grown out of, you know, they're very, very parallel things because I had been involved in the very early women's lands. In fact, We Moon Land, which is in Oregon, I started with my sister in 1973. And that was sort of the first women's land in Oregon. So then I was teaching women's studies, and I ended up leaving and just wandering for a number of years. I ended up over there in Europe and found myself on this land. And they had a whole history totally parallel to our own, the same timing and everything. It really makes you wonder about the ways of consciousness that hit the different shores, just the way the ocean does.
Right.
But they had had a women's camp, and then they had a lesbian women's camp, and then there were some women, this is in Denmark, then there were some women who wanted, there were actually women who wanted to do two different things. One group wanted to start a high school, a free school for girls who didn't fit into the school so much, or who wanted more freedom, more alternative curriculum, and then there was a group who wanted to just start a women's land, and they had very different approaches. And what I thought was so interesting, I love seeing women's culture in different countries because it expresses very differently. And in America, we would have fought over those principles, and someone would have been right, and someone would have been wrong. You know, who wanted to start the school, they had to get grants from the government. They had to work through the system. The ones who wanted to do the women's land didn't want to have anything to do with it. You know, they didn't do that at all. They totally supported each other, felt they were both really great ideas, and both things happened. There was a wonderful free school in Denmark for several years that supported women teachers and all sorts of innovative frontiers, and they were doing organic, sustainable gardening. The women at the school were growing their own food, and this was back in the 70s, the late 70s.
So
and
what do you think the difference
women
is?
Were, you know, did not have much money, but managed, really, they bought the land with welfare checks, which is not that unusual in Denmark because it's a small country, and there's not enough work for everybody. So often people work for a while, and then they're not working for a while, and people go on and off welfare. But at any rate, was in a very conservative part of Denmark. And anyway, out of that community, it was just a wild group of women who just had so much fun living together, and we had our astrological charts on the wall, and we were able to deal with relationships through the sort of international language through astrology. Different cultures had more focus on that than others, or planting by the moon and learning about that, or gardening, growing enough food. We grew a lot of food and supplied most of our basic needs. And anyway, that land eventually got literally undermined by a multinational corporation that sort of, oddly enough, kind of reflected, it was a mirror image, sort of. It was, we were there on this farm, just on this flat farmland, with little structures that we'd built around and about just to house everybody. There were maybe 50 or 60 lesbians there, and in the summers anyway. And then around us were these men in little trailers who were drilling down under the ground night and day with spotlights on. And all of a sudden they moved in and were trying to, it's a long story, but they were basically drilling out the salt deposits underneath the earth to either store natural gas or nuclear something or other. We were never quite sure which, but Denmark was a non-nuclear country, so maybe they really were doing it for natural gas. But nonetheless, they basically ended up, the land got expropriated from us and we were forced to leave. And at that point, actually, me and my partner were hitchhiking out of Kvinnaland. Kvinnaland means women's land in Danish. And we just sort of had this, you know, we were sort of searching for, well, how do we, when the ground gets pulled out from under us, literally, how do we stay in touch with each other? How do we, you know, what we've been creating together, which we can't do in one place anymore, and now we're just being scattered to the four directions, how could we proceed, continue to share what we're learning and our art and our writing and, you know, teaching each other what our different skills and knowledge is. And then where we came up with this idea of, well, what about if we, you know, let's, when the ground is pulled out from under us, maybe we need to look up, you know, at the sun and the moon and the stars and have these greater cycles be what we can stay connected around. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how the idea started.
Wow.
We ended up at a sister of my partner's on a farm in southern France and just started. We had only one piece of art that year, some anonymous piece of art we found behind the door. But we just started putting together. It was more about natural rhythm and natural cycles and the very most basic aspects of the sacred feminine that has to do with the Great Mother herself and what her teachings are, and just paying attention mm-hmm. to how it all works and how everything's interrelated and what, how do we live with these cycles. And
now, how long?
And then, meanwhile,
the
women came through and translated into five languages. The first Wee Moon was handwritten. We didn't have any typewriter or computer or anything, and it was translated into five languages. English,
and it went out
French.
To the went out to the 50 or 60 people that used to share the land.
Well, people just came by and started visiting and said, "Oh, well, I want to see this in Spanish," and so they sat down and translated it all. And then someone else wanted to see, you know, was Italian, and someone else was French and English and German. That's what we ended up having the first edition in. No, and then we produced. Well, we weren't very realistic, but we. Produced, I think it was 5,000 copies the very first year, and we sold maybe 3,000. But
well, despite wasn't bad.
Putting them in backpacks over the borders, different places, and sharing them with our friends, and taking them to the cities, and you know, and it really grew from a shoestring like that. It was just every year, whatever we made from the year before, we put into the next year. No mm-hmm. one was making any money off of it for years and years and years. There was nothing to pay us, and we just, whatever we had, we put into printing it. And
it was a labor of love, obviously.
A labor of love, and a lot
so
of hard work.
I'm just curious, time. How long were you able to stay on the land in Denmark before they, I guess, took it away from you?
Yeah, I guess it was only two and a half, 3 years. It wasn't
yeah.
that long. 1978, when I went there, and I think they started it just that winter. I think it started in 78, and it was over by 81.
So, all right, so you have, it sounds like, two women's communities now. And did you say Washington and New Mexico?
No, Oregon.
Oregon and New Mexico.
Yeah, I mean,
so
now those
that,
are the two communities I live in, because my partner and I each have lived in these two communities for many years, and then when we got together, it was like neither one of us was willing to give up our extended community of friends and sisters on the land, so we found a way to go back and forth with our jobs. But really, there are women's lands all over this country and all over the world. And, it's not something that's very much heard of or talked about, and a lot of that is because we just, you know, have our hands full dealing with making a livelihood and living on the land and being together. So it's more by word of mouth.
Yeah.
And it's nice to be able to talk to a wider audience like this and, you know, for people to be aware that there really are women, and there have been for a long time, and they are in many different cultures, creating communities together. That's my dog. And
so let's talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah.
I have some specific questions for you.
I mean, they're always, Denmark itself, actually, it turns out the name means Dana's Mark, Dana's Field. And it was a women's land way back when the country got started. The story goes that she was tired of being the only woman on the sort of pantheon of gods there, and they just joked at her and said, okay, well, whatever you can plow in a day, you can have. And she was a goddess, and her sons were there to serve their mother, and she turned them into bulls, and they plowed out the islands that became Denmark. And there's a big statue in the middle of Copenhagen, the bay there, that is of this huge, muscular woman, you know, driving this team of eight muscular horses, you know, and plowing up the water all around and creating Denmark.
And what was her name again?
Her name, Dana.
Dana. And
Dana.
I bet
Mark,
you can,
Denmark.
You can probably Google a picture of that, I would imagine. That would be fun to see.
Yeah.
So, all right, so let's talk about what those communities look like. I'm really curious, and I'm sure they vary, of course. If they're all
right.
Over, they must vary. But the land is owned by the women. I mean, do they have houses, trailers, yurts, teepees? I mean, how do people actually, how are they living on the land? I mean, is it like a commune, or do they rent the property that they live in? I mean, what's the general, you know, how does it all work?
It's all of the above, you know. It's as many people as there are, that's the variety. But really, generally, they're small communities. I mean, there is a community movement in this country and in the world that of mixed communities, men and women from different perspectives. Now a lot of environmentally based communities, and in the old days a lot of religious communities, and you know, it's not new to live in community, but really on the whole, women don't have so many resources, and our lands are usually in fairly impoverished areas where the land is not very expensive, or, you know, and a lot of time it's quite basic. I mean, where I'm sitting right now in this little house on the edge of a women's land and the edge of the National Forest, Santa Fe National Forest, and the women's land, and I don't have running water. But we do have water catchment, but we are in a drought, so we don't have much water, and we have solar power. There is no grid right here. We live in very simply and in women-built houses, mostly. And, you know, in the early days, it was we were kind of this can-do generation that we thought we could, you know, whatever we were set out to do, we just had to learn how to do it. There weren't people before us who were going to teach us. For instance, in Oregon, a land that I started with my sister, I built a house in the early 70s, and I found two articles in Country Woman magazine, which is an early country women's magazine, from Albion, California, and there was one article about, I can't really remember. I think it was one article about foundations and leveling the basic floor, and there was one about roofs and what you needed, and I just had to make it up in between. And at the time, I was teaching women's studies at Portland Community College, and a lot of my students came out and helped, and we, you know, and we would design it, and then sure enough, we'd get inspired about something different, and so we would do that, and it was all pretty makeshift, and nonetheless, that house still survives, and it's still my home in Oregon.
Wow. And, well, and, you know, my first thought is, because I'm in property management, gee, were you able to get the proper permits, or was there nobody that you had to answer to?
Right. Well, no, we were not able to get the proper permits, but in those days, there wasn't, you know, in 1973, when we started that land, there were not zoning laws, and there were not the same kind of permit laws that there are now. And so, but it's true, you know, then they developed pretty soon after that, and we just kind of built humble little houses in the woods or whatever and didn't build it out in the middle of the field. And, but since then, I mean, we actually had a huge fire that burned down our main house and the office for Mother Tongue, Inc. in 2000, and that was our Y2K. And what was I going to say about it? Oh, that the fire chief reported all these, you know, little structures that women were living in as permit violations, and we had to go through the whole process. But we did. We were able to establish that a precedent that we were an intentional community since the time before there were zoning laws or permitting laws. So we still had a right to do that. We had to do it both in terms of permits and planning, the land zoning. Planning commissions, and there was even a community meeting about it in the wider community, and people were, you know, and they basically said, okay, well, you've been here all this time, you have to do a few things to fix it up, and, you know, according to permits now, and we did, but they were really quite lenient with us and respectful of the fact that we'd lived there peacefully for a long time, and they, you know, there were no complaints from neighbors, and we were good citizens that were living our lives peacefully, and so we got to keep doing it, and now we've established the precedent, so we're above board.
So how big is that community? I mean, land-wise, you know, family-wise.
Right. It's 52 acres, and it's a lot of it sort of steep up and down land. There's maybe 16 acres of farmland and buildable land, and it's a small community. We're really right now, you know, actually pretty at a low ebb of the three of us long-term residents who are still connected to land are all have other communities we're also strongly connected with. Mm-hmm. And then there's three or four women who are there right now and a child. So it's small. And it's often the case, and it is also true that these lands that started in the 70s with the whole spirit of collective energy and, you know, alternative lifestyles, and we weren't so plugged into having to be in the corporate structure in order to survive at that time. But now people are more and need to be. There's not as much freedom in that kind of way. And there's, you know, we keep sort of waiting for the new generations of women to come. And they're coming, and they're coming with a different emphasis, more around learning permaculture and earth-friendly building and getting excited about different ways of working on the land and doing things. But at the same time, people expect a much higher standard of living than we can offer. Mm-hmm. And they sort of, you know, there's more kind of entitlement feeling around expecting that it should already be provided. And,
right, right.
You know, stuff.
Well,
like that.
You know, and that's maybe a good segue to one of my questions. I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, the foremothers that you know, sort of, you know, Monica, you know, Monica, Barbara Moore, you know, these women who contributed to so much, but, and, you know, some of them now passed away. Mary Daly passed away. Marilyn Stone passed away.
Monica,
you know, Monica passed away. Yeah. You know, who were, you know, if you'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, what, you know, the tribute we should, you know, afford these four mothers, but also, too, who are the new leaders carrying the torch now that so many of these important women who contributed so much are no longer with us?
Well, that's a good question.
I mean, is or, you know, do you feel like there are people out there carrying the torch, or is that maybe a problem?
I do. I feel like the torches are now being passed around by way many more women than they used to be. Like those names that you're mentioning, that was kind of who was doing that research then. I mean, Monica Sho, when she wrote her book, The Great Cosmic Mother, The Ancient Religion of the Earth, that research had not been done by women. There had been, you know, Joseph Campbell and a few others who had started to delve into goddess culture. And then Maria Gimbutas, she's another one who,
mm-hmm,
you know, is,
yeah,
an anthropologist who really exploded the myth that all figurines of women were somehow fertility goddesses, you know,
mm-hmm,
from the man's perspective of what they would be doing there. And, she, you know, she spoke 28 languages or something. She was a very accomplished archaeologist who had to really bust into the field and say, wait a minute, it's not all about war and weapons back then either. You know, there's so much more here, but they're not seeing it because it's invisible to their eyes. But anyway, now there are really quite a few others. I mean, and I, you know, I'm not even so up on it, really. We're just starting to go to women's studies, go back into women's studies. I actually was organized I think it might have been the first National Women's Studies Conference in 1970 at UC Santa Cruz. And back then it was like the community bringing the women's movement into the colleges and universities and say, pay attention to this, you know, study this. And now since then, women's studies have grown tremendously, but it's gotten more and more removed from the community in some ways. And with the anthology, which is really just a real slice, a 30-year slice of our history and our culture in the making, we're trying to go back into the colleges and say, let's reconnect here and, you know, share what we're getting from our different perspectives. But I know I went to the National Women's Studies Conference last year in Denver, and, you know, there's just so incredible, I don't know, 100, 200 studies at that one conference about all sorts of things, about women and women's leadership and research, and, you know, but it's gotten more and more specialized, and I don't know, it seems a little bit more, well, there's just a broad spectrum. In some ways it seems a little more disconnected from what's happening out there, and in other ways they're just incredible women, you know, from China who were there, who were talking about these fabulous demonstrations that they were doing. They couldn't do organized ones, so they were these kind of spontaneous guerrilla theater things, these flash mobs or whatever, where they go out, but they were doing it around women's issues, like just being silent, a bunch of women, and then, you know, just sort of creating guerrilla theater out of what was happening. And I don't know. So I think that what's happened is that it's spread out, and a lot more women are focused on a lot of different aspects of women's empowerment and women's spirituality, and, you know, so I wish I was being a little more articulate about exactly who right now, but there's just, I just connected up with an old friend from college, and she's written like 13 books, poetry books on goddess poetry, and she's someone you should have on your show, Mary Mackey, if you haven't had her yet.
No, not yet. You'll have to connect me up with her.
Yeah, she's got four goddess novels, so the first one based on Maria Gimbutas' work, or maybe, I'm not sure the order, and no, the first one was based on Merlin Stone's work, and then there's a trilogy based on Maria Gimbutas' work. But anyway, you know, I had no idea she was doing that, or, you know, there's just really a lot out there, and
right.
I would like, we do have an organization called WEME University that hasn't quite gotten off the ground, but one of my fantasies is to really bring together a lot of these resources that are floating around, but you know, that people don't know about.
Yeah.
So there's a place you can go for...
like a clearinghouse to find out about women's communities and all the latest publications and, I don't know, just
right,
everything.
Women's culture and women's spirituality and what, you know, and just with in-depth reviews and you know, forums and interactions. And we are having a WeMoon blog tour, I think it is, with a lot of different contributors are connecting with each other and having really creative discussion on our webpage. You can go and find out about that at www.wemoon.ws. Also, we have a We News newsletter, and, you know, creating, I mean, this new generation is bringing us into the age of electronic communication, which, you know, we started with a handwritten book, and then we graduated to a typewriter, and then a word processor, and then a computer, and, you know, and then a webpage, and now there's Facebook, and, you know, it's a big tectonic shift about how information is getting out there.
Well, when you look into your scrying bowl or your crystal ball, or you're laying there at 3 a.m. in the morning and you can't sleep, or maybe you're laying out under the stars at night, do you have some sort of premonition about, you know, what's to come?
Well, I feel like these are very exciting times to be living. They're full of contradictions. It's very difficult and challenging times to be living in. And at the same time, you know, every action is law of physics. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. That I think all of the stuff that is in the media about how horrible it is and how horrible catastrophes happening here, there, and the other place, and everyone murdering each other and violence everywhere and everything falling apart, at the same time all of that is going on, there's a whole underbelly, or as we call it, I think the WeMoon 2011, this year's theme, is groundswell. There's like groundwater, or the rising from the earth up. There's a whole movement, which you can see in a lot of times, you can see it in other countries easier than here, of that the power of people who are just, they can't do it anymore that way. They have to create something different, and they're rising up against all these tyrannical leaders, or the women who are, you know, doing micro business, getting micro loans, and they found that if you invest in a woman, you know, that goes out to her family, her community, to education and health and welfare and all that, whereas if you invest in a man, most of it goes into themselves, and often not in the most healthy forms. And so even the banking establishment is getting that, the global banking establishment is getting that women is the hope for the future, and women are the ones who are going to find a way out of poverty and find a way to take care of their families one way or another, and are, you know, coming into their own power. I really feel that the growing edge of feminism right now seems to be among women who have been in the most powerless positions, rising up and really turning that around on a local level. And there's the World Pulse. I don't know if you've seen that.
No,
magazine.
What is that?
It comes out of Portland. It's called World Pulse, and they have incredible articles from women all over the world, and they're focusing a lot on training women journalists from villages in every country, you know, and internet connection. I mean, they're doing amazing work. And there's also another organization called Madre, who's working with women's organizations all over the world in war-torn countries and different situations. What are the women doing? And there's there's a lot of women beginning to connect up with each other in similar situations. And also the whole movement around the grandmothers. There's the International Council of 13 Indigenous Grandmothers. There's a book they've written called Grandmothers Council the World, mm-hmm. by Carol Schaefer, but it's the stories of these 13 grandmothers who have come together in a sort of a living embodiment of the Indigenous prophecies that have been here forever about, you know, when the grandmothers speak, the world and the world listens, that's the time that things are going to turn around. And the grandmothers, the elders, and Indigenous peoples who have managed to weather the total destruction of their cultures in so many ways, but the leadership, the Indigenous leadership that's come out of that, there's a conference right across on the other side of this ridge I'm looking at right now, this mountain ridge in Nambe Falls, that is the Eagle Gathering of Indigenous elders from all over the world. And they've been, for the last 20 years or more, they've been finding a way to get together and share their stories from their different situations. And I think that's the kind of thing women are doing. And part of the Indigenous tradition, I mean, it's very much earth-based, and all the Indigenous wisdom traditions that are so much needed today that are out there, but they're also focused on the women and the elders.
So do you think...
leaders,
you know, I think sometimes we get the impression that, you know, we had this big surge in maybe the 60s and 70s, and then it all just sort of petered out. But now it sounds like, you know, maybe things are happening again. Do you think it's stronger now, or, you know, than it was back then? I mean, do you think we'll see something significant shift in our lifetime? I mean, I realize, you know, you don't have absolutes, but if what do you think?
Well, I think we'll have to see some significant shifts in our lifetimes, or we will be significantly shifted out of our reality that we are, out of our illusory reality that cannot maintain anymore. So that's the challenge, and, you know, it's been the challenge. I mean, a lot of these themes that are now up today were themes we were carrying back when we started WEMU, you know, and wouldn't it have been wonderful if in 30 years ago the kinds of actions that they're not even able to get together on in this country for dealing with environmental destruction, if they could have started it back then, but they didn't, and they haven't, and they're still not doing it. And, you know, we don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I do know that the Great Mother is rising up in her own way, and that she does, you know, we are just a tiny, tiny little drop in the bucket, according to her time and the ages, the cataclysms, and the everything that have happened before. But this is the first time that, as Tethroot says, we have fouled our own nest. The humans have fouled our own nest, and we are. And in that process, we may not be able to survive. And I do know one thing that I went to Amma. Have you heard of Amma? Amma Chi?
Yeah, the hugging saint, or
right,
a hugging goddess, yeah.
She's really a lot more than that, but she teaches very directly, you know, the transmission of unconditional love and the great need in this world for the Great Mother, literally, physically, there in the body. But anyway, she was just here in Albuquerque, and she said, you know, it's interesting that there's some scientific study that has shown that if all the insects in the world today were to disappear, that all life on Earth, as all the life forms that we know, would disappear within 50 years, whereas if human beings were to disappear right now, all life on the planet besides the human beings would be flourishing much greater in 50 years than they are now.
Yeah, we're the parasites.
Yeah, it's a little humbling. And basically your message is it's time to grow up.
Yeah.
This is our healing crisis, or our growth, our initiation right now, and we will either get there or we won't, but we need to take responsibility for the consequences of our actions and learn learn how to be in a different way on this earth, or we're not going to be here anymore.
Right.
So
well,
it's not,
you know,
to me, it's not like a fear-mongering thing. Oh, my God. It's just
It's just sort of
but
a fact.
But it's realistic.
Yeah.
It's what's
yeah.
happening. And, we're having horrible droughts. We've had to evacuate from our home here on the land twice in the last month because of big wildfire on one side of us and then a huge wildfire on the other side that came very close to Los Alamos Nuclear Labs, nuclear waste dump. And, and then at the same time, so we went up to Colorado where it was a little wetter and a little cooler, and they've had nothing but rain, apparently, for a long time. And there's the neighboring state. And then in Oregon, our friends back at Weemoon Land, they're like, it's winter in July there.
Yeah.
They're just rain and cold weather and, you know, and then there's the floods and then there's the droughts and then, it's just all the extremes are happening.
Yeah, it's destabilizing. And then,
yeah.
And if we were doing something, you could at least feel like, okay, we're working on it. But no, instead you have these, science deniers, climate change deniers, people who just want the end to come so they'll see Jesus. And, it's like we're not working together for the same things.
Right, but there are a lot of people who are working on it. And I don't know if you know about the Bioneers Conference
mm-hmm.
that happens in San Ramon, I know, it happens in Northern California in the Bay Area every year. And it is a group of really inspired visionaries, practical visionaries, I'd say, people who have been scientists and community organizers and women and in all different fields and people from all over the world and, have been saying some of these things for years. And at a certain point they got, I remember Van Jones, who's this guy and a community organizer in Oakland, California, who's like, the green wave has to raise all boats, not just
right.
for those at the top. But he was saying, at a certain point we looked around and was like, well, how come people aren't believing this? How come they're not joining us? And then just sort of taking a look at all this, when you first recognize all the negative stuff that's going on and how hopeless it seems, it's a little hard to gather momentum there. And they really, a lot of people just made the shift to work where they are at home, locally, on the level that they're at, where they, and anyway, they have very, very inspiring programs that they deal with. And I know the radio, they have
just
really incredible.
Yeah, you just have to look for it because it's there. I mean, I had Nina from Bioneers on the show. Also had Grandmother Agnes from the 13 Indigenous Grandmothers on the show, too. And, there is good work out there. Unfortunately, it's not in the mainstream news. Even the stuff that Van Jones is doing, trying to revive the progressive movement, it feels is that gaining enough momentum? But maybe you're right. Maybe the key is working locally because, look, that's really what the Republicans have done for the last 30 years, working on a state level rather than a national level. And, they've made incredible strides. Maybe there's something to that, take a page out of their book.
It's not really just their book. I mean, women have been the mainstays of family life and community life and, forever, all over.
Good point.
They're the ones who are mostly dealing with the human issues. And
exactly. Very good point. Thank you for making that.
And have had to go against huge odds, Now the whole world is having troubles, but mostly the great majority of the world has had such horrendous odds to work against just to survive. And it's often women who are pulling people through. And I feel like it's the leadership of women, not just being women, but women's consciousness, lunar consciousness and the opening to the mystery and the nuanced ways of moving in the world, more receptive to hearing and caring and loving and interrelatedness and relationship and
mm-hmm.
all of that work, which is just taken for granted, the work of women. It's and doesn't cost anything. It's what holds the world together, and that's our only hope.
Right.
And it's a big opportunity.
Well,
and I think it's going to take some huge crashing of the old systems. We haven't seen anything yet.
I think so too. I think it's going to have to get a lot worse before we see any major changes and shifts.
Right.
Well, Musawa, we're probably coming to the end here. But was there anything you'd like to say that you feel is important that maybe I have not thought to ask you?
Well, we've kind of had a far-ranging discussion here. It's been really fun to just sort of launch out into all the ways that women's spirituality is in fact very much connected. It's very much connected with life, and so in a way, let's see how to bring it back together. I guess I would just say that the spirit of women is so strong. For some reason, this poem from Judy Grand from way back when about the common woman will rise, like bread. And I feel like it's the neglected, the overlooked, the taken for granted, the abused, the oppressed ones who have found a way to survive one way or another. And there's a strength in that is coming through. And I think goddess spirituality, earth-based women's spirituality, it's such an important voice right now, and it's really starting to come through. And I hope that the younger generations really, I think there's a great potential for the ones coming along now who were our age back then to really take it and run with it. So that's what I'm
okay.
I hope so. Both the young people and the old people and all of us in between.
Well, ashi, sister. Okay, well, let's go ahead and give the website again. And why don't you go ahead and do that?
Okay, it's www.wemoon, that's WEMOON, .ws, as in website.
Okay. And don't you, if memory serves, I think, forgive me if I'm confused here, but besides doing the Wee Moon calendar, don't you also have those wonderful cards that you can buy that have the phases of the moon on it as well from Mother Tongue Inc., maybe?
Yes. Well, actually, we have that card as part of the Wee Moon, part of the date book, in the back of the date book, although the cards themselves, you mean with the different phases of the moon? Those are, let's see.
Like, it's for year. I think you'd have it
Susan
for every
Bayless
month.
Susan does that, and she puts them out, and she contributes that to Wee Moon each year, too. So,
okay.
She's a different resource, let's see.
I would just
her
encourage
website
listen.
Is snakeandsnake.com,
snake
where you can order those cards from. But what we do is we produce greeting cards from the art in Wee Moon every year. We have a big wall calendar where it's large size art. And we also have, I feel like we have Maiden Mother Crone represented now. The Crone is more the anthology that's just come out with the years of Wee Moon.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something for everybody. And then the Wee Moon itself, the date book, is, I'm saying it's for the mother, but it's really for everybody too. And then we have a children's book by Starhawk called The Last Wild Witch. Starhawk wrote this children's book and then asked Wee Moon if we would publish it, and we did. And Lindy Kehoe, one of our Wee Moon artists, contributed the fabulous art to that. So and we call it our Echo Fable for kids and other free spirits. So it's a children's book, but you can also get all of these on our website.
Well, that's wonderful, and I would encourage listeners the next time, they're looking for a gift or something for themselves to support Wee Moon or to support a woman's community. There are a lot of folks out there who keep the money in their own communities, to help build their communities, and I think women have to, get smart and do that too, support each other, so we have a more sustainable you know, livelihoods.
Thank you. I totally appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much, you know, for being a part of the show, for giving us a glimpse into, you know, what life has been like for you over the last few decades. And if any listeners want to know more about the women's communities, are they open? I mean, do you know, can people come and be a part of it, or is there some sort of qualifying criteria, or just maybe say a little bit about that before we close off tonight?
Right. Well, some of the communities are very open to visitors coming and camping and being there, and for new residents. In fact, most of the women's lands I know of are wanting new residents, women who want to come and live and work in community with women on the land. There's something called She Wolf's Directory. That is a directory of women's lands. That has, you know, a few hundred women's lands and how to contact them and who they're about, what they're about. And then there is, that's called She Wolf, S-H-E-W-O-L-F. I'm sure you could Google her and find her. And then Maze Magazine is another publication that comes out of women's lands. And it has a directory of women's lands every year that it updates, as well as articles by women living in women's land communities.
And I would imagine some communities are straight and lesbian, some are one or the other. It probably just varies from community to community.
Right, it does. A lot of them are lesbian-based because it's women who want to live with women, and it's okay with them that men are not a part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
But there also are, well, there's the Federation of Intentional Communities that has a big communities directory about lots of communities in this country. I'm not sure if it's international or not, that Women Land is in, and a lot of the women's lands are in that also.
Okay.
So that's one way. And then another whole way for young people interested in just checking out some lands and communities, the woofing community, that I think it's called Workers on Organic Farms, woofing. It's a big thing in Europe, and it's really catching on over here. It's a way to go and work and participate in projects on different lands in the summer, and you can travel to different lands, and you often get room and board for a couple of weeks while you work on what's happening. And it's a way for people to meet and connect and find out about different places. And there are women's lands who are having woofers as well. Or
okay.
Just volunteers for the summer, or, you know, work exchange and a lot of different arrangements. So
okay.
Check it out.
Okay, well, thank you. You know, thank you for bringing something fresh to the show. We haven't talked about this before, so I'm really grateful that you could, you know, share this new information with our listeners.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, stay cool and hope the fires stay way far away from you.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Well,
good night.
Much.
And thank you very much for being on the show, Misawa.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, listeners, this is Karen Tate, a hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss Goddess, the divine feminine, the right brain consciousness, you know, whether we call the great she, whether we look at her as a deity, archetype, or ideal, we do all of that here. And, you know, this was a great example tonight of how these new values and benchmarks just might save the world. And you've been listening to Misawa from We Moon discussing earth-based women's spirituality over the last 30 or 40 years. Well, as you know, I like to say, adversaries of the sacred feminine tried to sweep her away beneath the rug. And in that sweeping away, when the great she was made to disappear because of the religion of patriarchy, women and their power, their leadership, their spiritual authority, well, they were thwarted, repressed, became taboo, diminished, disrespected. That's why here on the show, I am dedicated every week for the last 3 years, maybe more now, to recovering the great she, whether she be deity, archetype, or ideal. Yes, here we intend to defy, to taste the forbidden fruit, to be powerful and uppity women, to throw off the shackles, look under every rock, behind every locked door, peer into the abyss of the past so that we know why things are the way they are, how they have come to be so turned on their head and unnatural, and where we are going about setting things right. Why? Because if we want to save ourselves as a species, if we want to save Mother Earth, well, I think we have no choice. So let me once again repeat the two mottos of the show. One's from the 19th century German philosopher, author Schopenhauer, and he says, "All truth passes through three stages. First, it's ridiculed. Second, it's violently opposed. And third, it is accepted for being self-evident." And the second motto from Gandhi, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in tonight. We are going to have two shows next week. It's sort of a special arrangement. On Monday, Monday night, we are going to have Marguerite Rigoglioso and Nancy Letzau. They are going to be talking about bee priestesses and bee colonies. We're going to talk about the sacred bee, past and present, the working of the hive as a of matriarchy and colony collapse as a response to patriarchy. We'll talk about those priestesses of Greece and India, and it should be a really fun show. And I am going to highlight the show with some wonderful music by Lane Redmond, who has some music specifically about bees in ancient Greece. So a very powerful show Monday the 25th at 6 o'clock. Then at our regular time on Wednesday, we're going to have Professor Pamela Berger on the show. And she is going to talk about how we got from, the metamorphosis from goddess to saint, from the grain goddess, to saint. And, we're going to talk about some other things, too. She's actually done some interesting films, one of them called The Sorceress. And so I think that's going to be quite an interesting conversation with her on our regular time, Wednesday, July 27th. So I am going to close the show tonight with just a short reading that I want to thank the abbess of the Abbey of Avalon, Sandra Sariel, for sending to me. It's called Folding a Rose. And it goes like this. "It's only a tiny rosebud, a flower of goddess's design, but I cannot unfold the petals with these clumsy hands of mine. The secret of unfolding flowers is not known to such as I, but goddess opens the flowers with beauty and no effort, just her grace. If I cannot unfold a rosebud, the flower of goddess's design, then how can I have the wisdom to unfold this life of mine? So I trust in her for leading each moment of my day. I look to her for guidance each step of my pilgrim's way. On the pathway that lies before me, I trust her to unfold the moments as she unfolds the rose." So thank you, Abbess Sandra Sariel, for sending that to us. And I think I'll close the show tonight on this lovely song by Abigail Spinner McBride called Arms of the Mother. And please remember, listeners, that Blog Talk is no longer free for hosts such as myself. I do have to pay for the airtime, so contributions are gratefully appreciated. You can go to my website and at KarenTate.com, go to the Goddess Store page. While you're looking at it, there's some free downloadable meditations there you can take advantage of, and there are PayPal buttons if you would like to make a contribution of any amount. It is greatly appreciated. So, in closing the show, here we go, Arms of the Mother with Abigail Spinner McBride.